Scotty, every time you call, or rather, every time I call, you break my heart by not answering, and then you call me back, and you want me to turn on my camera, but I can't, because I'm indecent. There, the truth comes out. Sometimes, I record this stuff, and I've barely gotten out of bed, because it's so damn early, such as my devotion.
Well, I mean, no one else sees the video. We're audio only, but I'm quite grateful you didn't use your video then, I have to say. So, there we are.
That sounds kind of mean.
Well, John, I mean, it's more that I'm not sure I could focus on anything intelligent to say with your sexy body on my 32-inch screen.
All 32 inches of flab.
All 32 inches of fox. That's what they say.
How are you, Scotty? Have you solved any world problems in the 5 days or 7 days since we last spoke?
No, I don't think world problems would qualify. Today is an interesting day, though, for us at Diligent Robot. Today is the anniversary of the launch of Moneywell. Into the App Store. And as people might remember, we launched with a 30-day offer of a $9.99 or effectively $10 annual subscription. So this next 30 days will determine how many of those people who took up the $10 offer a year ago renew at $49.99 and how many don't. And then we'll have an idea of where we stand. So it's going to be an interesting month, but it's, can you believe it's been a year? We have done 8 releases over the year, 9 releases even, maybe. Nothing, some with some big things in, some with some little things in, but it's been quite an interesting year, really.
And so are you taking bets? Like, is it down at the local, what, I don't know, there's not a pool hall in East Bollockshire. Like, what would be like the central the central social hub? Are they taking bets as to whether you'll be, lying down in the side of the road begging for a little bit of food, or basically driving down in a tractor limousine?
Well, no, we're not taking bets. The reality is we have no idea how this is going to work out. No idea. Because the trouble is with an app like Moneywell is, some people will log on or not log on, will fire up Moneywell every single day and enter their daily transactions. Some people will fire it up every 6 months when they think, shit, I haven't done my budgeting for a while, and try and catch up again. And some people will start off the year with every good intention budgeting and then realize that they have failed miserably and not do it anymore. So obviously our daily usage analytics don't really tell us much about how often people are using it. We don't tend to track that. We possibly could, but we don't right now. We just know how many people are using it, how many of those are licensed, how many of those are like on trials or whatever else. So the reality is how many people. Now, one of the things we had was, I suspect that an awful lot of the people who took up the $10 offer in the first 30 days were existing Moneywell users. Now, for those who have maybe come on board to the podcast in the last year, that might be 1.5 of you. Or those who were listening, before, that might be 2.6 of you. Moneywell had not had any major updates for 5 or 6 years. And anyone who was still really using Moneywell was probably a long-term die-hard user. I mean, some of our users have been around since like 2007 or something. So I guess what we'll find out is those who'd been sticking around with Moneywell waiting to see what happened. Well, let's be honest, some of those who've been long-term users since 2007 never cross-created
to the App Store. Are no longer on the planet.
Yeah, they just stayed with Moneywell 3, the last version. It still seemed to work for them. They just stuck with it and carried on using it because they've been using it for years. It had all its failings, but they were used to the failings and they just dealt with it. But a bunch came across. So I guess we're going to find out for how many of those people the changes we made and the new way it works were satisfactory, because if they've been using Moneywell for that long, The reality is, unless we piss them off, they should still be using MoneyWell, because you know, you don't suddenly stop using something after 10 years, or the majority don't. If you have been going, they tend to be people who just keep going. So if they stop using it, it's probably because we've pissed them off with what we've done. So we'll be interesting to see. But as I've always said, it's one of the things we're going to find out is, you know, we had a small but loyal user base, and this was mainly from back from its original developer, Kevin Hochter. We're the third developer on this, but the middle developer sort of zoned out and did a bit of a UI update, but you didn't do much else, and then it went stale. And so, a lot of people were around for a long time with that. So, and you know what, John? I started that sentence, and I have no idea what I was going to say now. Oh, yes. I do now. Because we like Kevin Hochter, and because one of the reasons Kevin, you did a deal with us on taking over MoneyWell was because he had a care for his old existing users. Because even though he wasn't the owner of it anymore and the developer anymore, you know, he still felt a love and fondness for those who'd given him, you know, a career before he went to Apple. But now I guess we're going to find out over the next 12 months, you know, were we right to really look after those users, to make sure we created a good transition path for them, to make sure we really looked after them? Because I say it wasn't a huge number. Or should we have just said, sod it, we're going to just go for the new users and do everything that a new app should do and satisfy them? And I guess the next 6 months will tell us whether we made a good call or not, or probably more realistically, leave us with really inconclusive thoughts on it because analytics are really hard to read and understand.
That was quite the, because really analytics are hard to understand, and they are. And you can't entirely drive your life on data. You know, there's always much discussed about kind of, do you do it on hunch? Do you do it on data? Do you do it on data that supports your hunch, or ignore data when your hunch is so strong? But I have a selfish question, which I've asked before, and I'm wondering maybe I'll get a different answer now because we had a new version of iOS. But a common problem I, as a parent who's trying to teach money skills to my child, have is, you know, it's hard to get on in the world without access to a credit card because there are so many places that don't take cash. And you want, you know, like, you know, if you're in college and you need to get on and take a train or something like that, it's much easier just to swipe with your phone. But because you swipe so easily, you have no idea what you're currently spending. And I, you know, Apple obviously knows because from Apple Pay, they do that. But I'm also assuming that there's still no kind of third-party API that you could grant permission to Apple, you know, whatever, Apple Wallet, to get access to the data. And so you could actually show it and say, to date, I have spent X in this month on this card. Because they only give you the individual transactions, but it's hard to actually see how much up to a certain point.
See, I have no idea if you have planned and loaded this question knowing the answer or whether it's a genuine question.
It is a genuine question, okay. And I don't know the answer.
So
I asked you before.
As of, was it yesterday or the day before or whenever the release of iOS 17.4 came along, Apple have introduced an API to allow developers to get to card data from Apple Wallet.
That is actually really cool. I'm telling you that this is that's really very interesting. Are you happy about that? You should be.
No, because
why not?
At this moment, well, not unhappy about it, but at this moment in time, MoneyWell is primarily a Mac app with a iOS companion app, whereas the Apple Wallet SDK is only available on iOS. And because at this moment in time, we don't do really much data change from iOS. It is more of a you can use it to record your daily transaction and see where you are, but we don't do any major maintenance in iOS. I mean, the plan is to change that, but at the moment we don't. It means it will be very different for us to try and support the Apple Wallet import stuff from the iOS. Well, not doing. Not saying we couldn't do it, and we will be reviewing it. But at this moment in time, we have to decide what to do about that. And because it's only just come out, we haven't really done that yet because there are things we're trying to get out the door. And I guess once we've got those out the door, we will ask ourselves those questions. I mean, I guess the reality is if you were to start MoneyWell today, you would probably start it as an iPad app that happened to run on the Mac. because that probably is makes more future sense, and then none of this will make any difference, these things. Whereas, but we are currently running a Mac app, so those our iOS, let's say our iOS strategy is something that we are talking about a lot, but we're a little way off delivering.
Well, that's very interesting that you say this thing, and I'll make my last pitch, and it's not going to surprise you, but I think that my understanding of Moneywell always was, back even before you guys had it, I think maybe it was Kevin Hochter who was on the show talking about it, saying that this was basically, that it was an offshoot of something that they were doing when they were trying to get out of debt, and they said, you know, the reality is we have to have budget, so we have physical envelopes into which we will deposit money, or even if they're not that old-fashioned, but basically you say, hey, this is what I can afford to spend on this, and then usually there's some type of budget. It's like, this is your miscellaneous budget, and it is what it is. And Apple Card has this ability to share your card and to put some limits on it, which I think is useful. But even if it's not somebody else applying a limit to you, just basically saying, hey, I'm going to allocate whatever X per month on for my kind of, takeout coffee and pizza slice budget or something like that. And something that could basically say, okay, this is, you've reached that. And now you wouldn't as a third party to be able to decline the charge. And presumably with Apple Card, they can do those things, but at least give some visibility, because otherwise people don't know. It's just too damn easy to swipe, 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 swipe. And then eventually somebody else has to pay the bill. So I'm begging for this feature for you.
Let's remember something first, that of course, that we can access banking. Your Apple wallet has your normal cards in, and we can, via the current existing APIs that are available on the web, through providers, access transactions for credit cards and bank accounts and all the rest of it through that method. So for virtually every card other than the Apple Card, we can access transactions. So the only real benefit to the Apple Wallet SDK for us will be to access transactions for the Apple Card.
Because okay. Well, that makes sense.
Is in there. So, I mean, that's my first level understanding of this. And I don't know what it's like in the US, but, I mean, debit cards are far more prevalent in the UK than credit cards. And obviously, debit cards, every bank tends to have... every bank tends to have an online app, and you can see your transactions. I know if I use my debit card in my banking app, the transaction appears straight away, and I could do certain reports and analytics. But of course, what it doesn't do is combine my accounts for me across things. If I've got three or four accounts, or whatever else, and that's where Moneywell comes together. To go back a little bit, Hochter's first. This is the Kevin Hochter show. Hi, Kevin. Everyone's got a lick of Hochter. They're the blast from the past. That most people will have no idea what I've just said. Did he just say lick a Hochter? Kevin's first app was an app called Debt Quencher. His first app, which was all about paying down credit card debt, which obviously is a very common problem in the US. We do have significant credit card debt in this country, but because we have overdrafts, most people have overdrafts on their checking account, current account here. People tend to do their cash flow spending through, taking their bank account to a negative balance as opposed to sticking stuff on credit cards. But anyway, Kevin's first app was about paying down credit card debt. And then once the debt was down, he thought, well, the way you don't get back into debt was you budget properly. And so funnily enough, Moneywell is not actually brilliant at managing the paying down of debt because it's designed for you not to get into debt in the first place. And it sort of makes a semi-assumption that you're not in debt when you start. And therefore, it's not absolutely brilliant at getting you to pay down debt in order that your budget then becomes more manageable. And that is one of the major changes we're looking to make over the next 12 months, is to say, to acknowledge that a lot of people want to start budgeting because they're in debt and they need to get themselves out of it. And it will be far better if Moneywell was better at that. So just to, before people run out and say, I'm going to control my life with Moneywell because I'm in loads of debt, and we get a million sales from the listeners here. Not sure you'll be as happy as you think you might be.
Well, just one last thing before we can move on to something else is like it is true that the person that runs the account, you know, that it has access to all this thing. So, but what I believe this wallet API would allow you to do is this tracks spending, you know, by an individual that to whom you grant access to the card. And it might, you know, that because it's a common thing, because there are, you know, everybody who's a parent at some point, you know, for some period of their lives, their kids are financially dependent on them. Hopefully it doesn't, you know, it lasts until they're 60 or something and finally decide to leave home. But, you know, certainly during the college years, and those potentially are the expensive ones when you're kind of in that adult phase and you're like saying, hey, you know, I'm hungry. I would like to DoorDash myself a hamburger. And then you just don't think twice about it, but somebody's paying the damn bill. So I think that's what I'm wondering about. And I think, you know, one of the things
that exists. Do you know what the simple answer to that is, John? And it's the answer we have mainly in this country. Yeah. In fact, it's very hard to do in this country. Don't give your kids your credit card. Then you don't have to care. This whole thing of giving someone else your credit card to use has never been something you've been able to do in Europe because it's illegal. And, you know, before technology, you had to sign for it, and it could only be the signatory on the card who could sign. There's not none of this swipe and walk away like you used to have in America. So, yes, you can add additional cards to your account and things like that, but, yeah, it's but not just give someone your card.
Scotty, are you trying to somehow say that the only country that matters is not America?
Yeah. John, America first.
Exactly. I don't know.
Isn't that the slogan?
Something like that. Make America first at being great again or something.
Something like that. Anyway, John, we've talked far too much about home budgeting and finance, and it was all about saying over the next 30 days, we're in our interesting first annual subscription renewals, and we will see how it goes. And then be interesting to, you know, because we don't really know, for us, how we react to it, you know, if it's good or if it's bad, or, you know, what responses we make to it, because it's the first time we've been in this situation. So there we go. Anyway, John. Take us somewhere else. Just zip us off of this darling cloudy island of budgeting and financial deficit, and take us somewhere sunny and happy.
Well, I think sunny and happy is the continued saga of this kind of, you know, I told you about the Hack Day competition, you know, the project that my child and his teammates went into, and they're still working on it. They basically decided that, you know, even though it was supposed to be like a self-contained thing over the course of essentially a weekend, you know, they're on to doing additional ones. I'm kind of jealous because it sounds fun, like being able to regularly build stuff. I love kind of time constrained creative sprints like that. But they really like it, and they're working on it, and it's yeah, I think I'd said last time that, you know, my child will sometimes say, it's like, you know, the future is now, old man, you know, I'm coming for your job. And, you know, he's right in many ways. But, you know, it's been interesting seeing how the app has evolved a little bit, because at first you're trying to get something up and running, you know, and a reminder that this was a pure Swift UI app saying adopt all the you know, to really start file new project and try not to go, you know, drop down into either UI kit directly or even let's call kind of UI kit patterns. And so, you know, it's been interesting. You start to develop it. It was not done with tons of planning. It's definitely kind of, you know, sketching it out and making it up as you go along. In an ideal world, you sit down with an interaction designer and you kind of, you know, whatever, build out the user experience and the flow and so on and so forth. And that's not how this was done. It was basically kind of, you know, very, very messy of like, can I get something on screen? Can I modify it? Can I see how it works? Can I understand how you know, the shared environment and shared view models and passing data from view to view and so on and so forth, understanding the Swift UI way of doing it. But then you start to say, okay, in some ways, there's nothing wrong with doing that, especially when you're just getting started and you don't have the luxury of people whose sole purpose is thinking about this in advance. So, you know, what I noticed, for example, is, you know, that you were starting to say, okay, well, we need a way to be able to specify these are things that I care about and these are things I might respond to. And a reminder for people who weren't listening last time, this was for an app called DuckDash, ducks being the mascot of Stevens Institute,
And DoorDash being a popular way of delivering delivering stuff, you know, getting takeout meals delivered to you. So the idea was like basically let students do each other a favor by picking up and delivering to their classmates or something when they're going the same way. If you're going back to your dorm, maybe you do a solid by picking up an order or two for you know people who may live down the hall from you. And so, you know, you have orders that you ask, like saying, hey, I've ordered this, and if somebody can pick it up for me, that would be great. Similarly, you have to have ones that are saying, well, here are some orders, and I'm going that way. Can I easily find out, you know, make it so convenient for me to do it? It's like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. So the original way of doing it was just basically having a tabbed view in the one view. But then there was a navigation bar, and this was a long way of saying that basically the decision was made it somewhere down along the lines, like, oh, now we have to have a bottom tab interface. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised and shocked at how easy it is and how little code was required to do it. And that stands in marked contrast from when we went to a tabbed interface in UIKit land in the Netflix app, lo those many years ago. And it, you know, on the one hand, it seems like, wow, it's just a small decision. But it from a technical point of view, it's not such a huge decision. But from a UX point of view, it absolutely is. When you have tabbed interfaces, it can still become very confusing to people. But the point I was getting at here is that when Swift UI makes it so easy to do, and you don't really have to re-architect the universe, you just basically rearrange the description. It changes the way that you're able to evolve and think about it. And in a way that I think it's actually, I'm going to say it, I think this seems to be in many ways Swift UI's super strong suit, that you can experiment and see what the results would be like rather quickly before you commit. Now, you may decide that, you know, that's not the right way of doing it. And if that's the case, great, you know, but I don't know. And we're sounding like a fanboy of Swift UI, but from this aspect of it, that really is. And it also is kind of interesting to me that, you know, my son he's dabbled in this stuff. He doesn't want to do software engineering, at least so he believes now. Whereas his teammate is a CS major, had not used Swift UI before, very early on in his trajectory. But I see how fast he's able to pick it up, which must mean it's either intuitive or he's just really good at writing ChatGPT prompts. Probably both. But anyway, there's the sunshine.
I think Swift UI is amazing when you can adopt it whole hog and use everything about
right.
it.
Yeah.
Okay, when you use all the property wrappers, all the state stuff, and you know you're using structs and all the rest of it, and you're following everything that makes pure Swift UI work really well, and it's a 100% Swift UI project, and everything is designed around the way Swift UI works. It is absolutely brilliant. Swift UI's problem is when you need to break away from that somewhere, and now you have to introduce something that doesn't work around it, and you're trying to find a way of massaging it into still doing what it needs to do properly. Or what happens when this object that you can't make observable for whatever reason changes, and you now need to inject it in there or whatever else. And that's when, and the reality is that's where most of us are having to play with Swift UI, because unless you're doing far new projects and supporting iOS 17 or whatever onwards, you know, you're probably introducing it into something already exists, which is why I think a lot of us who are trying to go with Swift UI have, firstly, we're trying to mix paradigms and we're more familiar with the old paradigm than the new one. Always a problem. If you're coming to Swift UI, it's the first thing you've learned. My son is learning Swift UI. It's all he's ever going to have known. That's the way he thinks UI works. His problem is going to be when Swift UI gets replaced with the next thing, whenever that is.
So
I think Swift UI, when you get to use it just as Swift UI, yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. And what you can do with it, you know, what you can do with it covers, you know, yeah, 99% of the functionality you would ever want. I mean, it covers lists, it covers tables, it covers master detail, it covers all this. And the reality is, at times that it doesn't work, even when you're using pure Swift UI, is when some designer has asked you to do something that is not really standard iOS. And then it's your problem to make it work differently, because standard iOS tends to work with Swift UI pretty well.
Indeed. And even now when I think about it, because we talk about it a lot at work, and, you know, I contrasted the experience of
blue sky, just getting started development. And when you have this kind of luscious naiveness where you think, well, absolutely anything is possible, but then, you know, you build an app and you have to ship it and you have to support other devices. And so in some ways, you've been, if you're working on a well-established app that you've been shipping for a long time, then it becomes somewhat, I'm not going to say drudgery, but it's just like you just can't up and change everything. You can't re-architect something overnight, and yet you still want to use the new goodness, and you try to think, okay, what's the reasonable way of doing it? And you know, we've had to been very stepwise in doing this, and we're having some pretty good success with it. You know, I shipped a bunch of Swift UI stuff. People are starting to do more of it, and it's fun. It really is, but we're still kind of a little bit cautious about it. And there was yet another discussion, you know, in a Swift Slack channel about understanding the magic below Swift. And as I think many people know, you know, Swift is written in C++, which was always, to me, is like, oh my God, that's like third rail. That's so frightening even saying it. I don't ever want to know anything about it. Through the child who basically, you know, was taught a course in C++ and his robotics work. You know, the last year the team had made a switch away from Java to C++ for performance reasons and whatnot. So I get why. But anyway, there was this whole discussion that I will find this in the show for the show notes, had basically said, how is it that Swift UI understands how to know when something needs an update? And to me, as a kind of, you know, a grumpy graybeard, remembering all the things with, you know, when KVO was introduced and bindings were introduced a million years ago and how magic it was. And then people said, oh, but it doesn't work, you know, or it works until it doesn't. And then you're fucked because you can't figure it out. And as they say in French, plus ça change, the more things change, the more they stay the same. There is still some magic. It's underneath. Apple, you know, does not kind of make it, you can speculate, you can go through and open up a debugger and do some fun tricks and see how it works. But some guy went and kind of figured out how does that mechanism work. And mostly not to be able to say that that's so that you can then use it directly, but at least you can understand what's going on underneath and so that you can either kind of reason your way out of a problem where something is not quite working. So it's kind of fun. And the last thing I guess I would say about it is it makes me wonder if Swift UI with all this kind of we're going to do things exactly the right way. We're going to walk away from this messy dynamism that, you know, that Objective-C kind of ruined an entire generation of developers, myself included, into saying, hey, let's message nil. Let's do all these different things. Everything is an object. And you know, you can't do that in the world of structs and Swift. But on the other hand, you can't get the dynamism without something. So it seems like really what they're doing is rewriting some stuff in C++. Otherwise used to be an Objective-C, and maybe for some performance reasons it's slightly faster, but still has this inner core that they don't want to expose to the world because it gives lie to the fact. But anyway, that's all philosophical and nerdy.
Philosophical and nerdy. We love it. We love it. John, I think I know the answer to this question, but I cannot believe I never asked you the question. And so now to make it official on the show... I need to ask you, did you purchase a Vision Pro?
I did not, in fact. I did not because...
That's what I thought the answer would be, because I thought if you had, you would be Scotty. But you never did. But I just thought I needed to check.
No, and I feel bad because, like, well, virtually all of my other colleagues did. But, you know, I mentioned how the fact that having a kid in college is expensive, and I couldn't see spending the amount of money on it, you know. And I will even admit that I myself have not tried it yet. I've sat next to people that have gone and done it, but I think part of the thing is that I don't think it would work very well unless I have the actual lens insets for it. I'm sure that there, you know, it's not that I'm blind or anything like that, but I think I would have a hard time. Well, that's probably not true because it adjusts and you could just step back a little bit. And, you know, I followed it very closely, and of course it's much discussed, and I kind of will keep my mouth shut about it. I don't feel, whereas I was like feeling, ah, shit, that sucks. And my child has, you know, has access to one because in the house that he spends a lot of time, the kind of one of the upperclassmen has one.
But it is not broken my heart, and that's part of the longer thing of, like, I do love new shiny as much as the new one, but you know, I suppose I have, like, other pragmatic things. I still intend to get one. The other thing in the back of my mind is trying to hoodwink, you know, somebody from Apple. I shouldn't say this online, but you know, Apple employees do get some friends and family discounts, and maybe do that. So, how about you? Have you actually tried one?
Nope, not tried one. I know a few people who have. Whatever. It's just interesting to see in the wild some of the problems that come. I'm not criticizing. I've not tried it. Can't say. You know, a lot of people return them is apparently the rumor. But yeah, I don't know how many people return their new iPhone or their new watch in comparison. I don't. Are the figures bad? I have no idea. I'm not going to be unfair to make anything about it. But I haven't. I think my. Do you know what my biggest concern about the Vision Pro is right now, John?
What is your biggest concern about the Vision Pro right now?
That it is going to absolutely dominate WWDC this year, and we're not going to get major updates to other things that maybe need updating, like, you know, massive updates to Swift Data because it doesn't work and stuff like that. That maybe, you know, we're not going to see so much information on it because every other session is going to be about developing for Vision Pro. Because I think... One of the reasons I'm hearing that people have been returning it, and again, I've no idea if the return values are really proportionally higher than any other product, so this may be total nonsense, is because, you know, it was very hard. There were no apps on day one, or very few apps on day one. And I'm just interested to see if Apple are going to do a massive push for developers at WWDC to try and sell them on the idea of developing for Vision Pro. And making our apps work for it, and whether that then dominates everything else, which for those of us who have no value in it, I mean, other than being a fun item we'd love to get our hands on just because of shiny, that would make WWDC even less exciting than it's been for the last few years, because I feel it has lost a lot of its zing. And probably that's because we just watch it online now and don't go there, and the buzz was always about going and whatever else. But, you know, again, we've spoken many times about how we actually feel the video delivery is a lot better way to deliver the content than the in-person one was. But, yeah, so my concern is that, you know, Dub is going to be Vision Pro dominated, and then the iOS, obviously, and those of us who are poor Mac developers will be left once in the weeds.
Retract further into the corner. I don't know. Could be. The way that I've really ended up thinking about it is, like, it points the way for a lot of innovation, a lot of brand new types of things. I haven't really seen anything that's like, oh my god, this is the most killer app, other than you know the spatial videos, and that basically, especially the evocative memory aspect of it. But then it basically says, 5 years from now, you will wonder how you ever kind of lived without having every video moment that you capture be spatial video. And so I think it's pointing out that Apple's knows this, is very smart about it, and basically saying, you know, they're playing a long game on it. But I take it.
I mean, obviously, yeah. The ideal solution is that there are 100 Vision Pro videos for Dub this year, but there also turns out to be 100 more videos in total than there were last year.
Then everyone's happy.
And talking about keeping everyone happy, John, we ought to fuck off.
Yes, I think so.
if people want to give you ways in which you can fuck off, how should they do that?
Well, you can find me on the internet and tell me to fuck off with whatever degree of politeness or rudeness. You can move the slider. And if you're on Threads, you can find me as John Fox. And if you're on Mastodon, you can find me as Djembe. That's Djembe, like the West African drum, Djembe at Mastodon.social. And a quick shout out to Marga, who did find me on Mastodon, and I didn't reply, partly because I kind of tend not to talk about Netflix questions online. Just it makes it safer to do so. But I do see you, and I did see your question. And the answer is, I don't know anything more than what's available on the public internet. So how about that? And Scotty, if people want to you know, save you as you retract your way back into the furthest edges of the back of the room, where might they do that?
John, they will find me hiding away in the deepest, darkest corners of Mastodon, where I am like an insignificant insect on the back of the most insignificant leaf on the most insignificant tree of the most insignificant forest in the world. I have no idea why I went that way, but I am Mac Devnet. Mac DevNet, because there we are, a Mac developer, and I apparently at one point was a network, at mastodon.social. Well, John, it's been fun to catch up as always, and I think it's probably time, for the sake of humanity, that you go put some clothes on. So we will say to our listeners, or listener, whoever you are this week, thanks for listening, and until next time,
you take care to put pants on before you go out in public. Thank you.